Welcome to Raising Our Voices for Health Equity, a podcast series from Vaz Advisors. I'm your host, Kim Thibodeau. Through our conversations with various guests, we've learned about the challenges of health equity in the U.S. and some of the solutions that are being put forward. Today, we are going to look at health equity, defined by the CDC as the state in which everyone has a fair and just opportunity to attain their highest level of health on a global scale, with a special emphasis on rare diseases. Being diagnosed with a rare disease can be challenging, even in the best of circumstances. But imagine being diagnosed in a poor country or facing inherent discrimination in healthcare while also navigating the complexities of a rare disease diagnosis. Our guest today is a leading global advocate who is educating the world about rare diseases while also advocating for patients' rights and a heightened global commitment to more research, better access, and universal health coverage. Please join me in welcoming Flaminia Macchia, former Executive Director of Rare Diseases International, to the show. Flaminia, thank you for agreeing to share from your previous experience at RDI today.
Thank you, Kim, for inviting me today.
Well, let's jump right in. I have a lot of questions for you. Flaminia, to start, just tell us a bit about yourself, your background, and how you came to be the Executive Director of Rare Diseases International.
Yes, I have been active in the rare disease field for more than 20 years, at first as a consultant and then as the director for European and then progressively international public affairs at EURORDIS. EURORDIS is the European Organization for Rare Diseases. Then I worked for 5 years in pharma, where I was leading the engagement and partnership with patient groups in specific rare disease areas. And lastly, I've been the executive director leading RDI, which is Rare Diseases International, until a couple of weeks ago. And RDI is the global alliance of persons living with a rare disease and their families across all rare diseases and across all countries.
Wow, that's an impressive background, Flaminia. Thank you for sharing that. I want to get into the mission of RDI in a minute, but before we do that, let's break this down for our listeners today. What is the definition of a rare disease? Do we know, for example, how many rare diseases there are in the world?
So rare diseases are diseases which affect a small number of people compared to the general population at one point in time. In the US, a disease is considered rare if it affects fewer than 200,000 Americans. Okay. In Europe, a disease is considered to be rare when it affects one and less than one person in 2,000 people. And some other countries have similar but slightly different definitions. Also, we need to bear in mind that a disease can be rare in one region and less rare in other regions. So, well, there are examples like beta thalassemia or sickle cell disease, etc. Although each rare disease impacts a small number of people, there are an underestimated 6,000 rare diseases identified today, which altogether affect over 300 million persons globally, and most probably much more than this. So this leads us to say that rare diseases are not rare and do represent a global priority. And if you want me to elaborate a little bit on the characteristic and the common features of rare diseases, one can say that rare diseases are often severe to very severe, chronic, mostly degenerative and life-threatening. And the onset of rare diseases occur in childhood for the majority of rare diseases, which are also very difficult to diagnose. So that means delayed diagnosis or misdiagnosis or complete lack of diagnosis that lead to inadequate care, the worsening of the condition, and often the birth of affected siblings. Rare diseases are mostly disabling. That means that the quality of life of persons with rare diseases is often compromised by the lack or the loss of autonomy. They're highly painful in terms of psychological burden, with psychological despair linked to lack of therapeutic hope and absence of practical support for everyday life. Most rare diseases are incurable. In some cases, symptoms can be treated to improve quality of life and life expectancy. And overall, rare diseases are difficult to manage for families who encounter enormous difficulties in finding adequate both medical and social care.
Wow. I think that some of the numbers you've shared are kind of shocking, maybe a little overwhelming for our listeners, for me certainly, over 6,000 rare diseases in the world affecting over 300 million people. Those are some startling statistics. And I think all of the challenges that you've laid out, you know, not only the physical and medical challenges, but the social and the psychological and the emotional challenges for the patients, for their families, is really stark. It's just very intense numbers. So how did an organization like Rare Diseases International, how is that organization taking on this incredible global challenge of rare diseases?
Yes, so Rare Diseases International has a very straightforward vision, which is a world where all persons living with a rare disease and their families will have a better life than the one they have today through better recognition and better support in all countries at all ages and for all rare diseases. So RDI is really disease agnostic. And RDI's mission to work towards this vision is to be a strong common voice for the community of rare diseases, of persons living with the rare disease at global level. That means advocating for rare diseases as an international policy priority, and we have moved away from only public health priority, but more holistically policy priority, and also represent the community at international institutions, typically the WHO or the United Nations, while at the same time empowering RDI's members, but also other patient groups to be even stronger advocates at national level for their own local circumstances and priorities. And in December 2022, RDI has 86 members or organizations which are themselves umbrella organizations. So through its membership, we can say that RDI is active in over than 150 countries worldwide.
Wow, extraordinary reach and certainly an important mission to be this international body representing folks from all over the world. Flaminia, our show, as you know, is focused on health equity. And we, as we said at the top of the show, health equity is defined by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control as the state in which everyone has a fair and just opportunity to obtain their highest level of health. And I know that that RDI, you know, leans into that definition and that mission. So I'm imagining, as I said earlier, that just the challenges of being diagnosed with a rare disease in a place like the U.S., you know, can be incredibly difficult. But being diagnosed in a poor country or being diagnosed while facing, you know, discrimination in the healthcare system must be incredibly intense. So talk to us in the context of health equity about the unique challenges of being diagnosed with a rare disease.
Yes, as you're underlining, RDI as well aims to promote the delivery of high quality health and social care to everybody around the world. And this end goal can only be achieved through social justice and therefore equity, as equity is the hallmark of social justice. It focuses on reducing all sorts of inequality, social, technological, economic, health-related inequalities and facilitate equal opportunity to attain the greatest level of health and well-being, leaving no one behind, which is really the motto of the United Nations Agenda 2030 for sustainable development. So what we have done, we have, RDI has developed a statement on health equity, the perspective of persons living with a rare disease, that makes a clear difference between equality, which implies that everybody must get the same in order to achieve an equal situation, and equity. Equity, we define it as the belief that fairness requires the recognition of the different circumstances and challenges that every person faces. So it implies that everybody gets according to what everybody needs. So for everyone to reach the same finish line, we may say that equity is a way to restore equalities. And that means that we need to understand the specific challenges of persons living with a rare disease in order to be able to give them what they need. And this is where the specific challenges of living with a disease which is rare strike. There is so little knowledge, there is so little understanding of the specific challenges faced by this population that it is extremely difficult to provide the services, whether it's healthcare services or social services, that are adequate to restore equality. Indeed, this population faces a multi-facet, a multi-dimensional list of challenges, whether it is gender equality or linked to poverty or access to education or access to decent work, and obviously all the directly health-related challenges.
Right, right. Let's talk a little bit more, Flaminia, about the developing world and how the challenge of rare disease is sort of exacerbated in the developing world. I mean, we're talking about, as you mentioned, access to healthcare. We're talking about diagnostic workup. We're talking about sometimes maybe access to specialized treatments. I've traveled extensively in the developing world. I'm imagining that there are particular challenges in the developing world when it comes to rare disease and equity.
So certainly there are all the challenges related to access, which is not only access to medicines, as you were underlining. It starts with really access to information, access to knowledge, access to centers of excellence or centers of care, but also just the closest clinic with some sort of understanding of rare diseases in general. And then we move to access to all sorts of healthcare services and treatments, to therapies, to diagnoses, to newborn screening, et cetera, et cetera. We have clearly noticed that in some countries that is there is not even a definition for rare diseases. So you can imagine how easy it is when something is not even defined, keep it invisible. And when a population is kept invisible, obviously the specific needs of that population are also easily ignored. All of this, especially after the COVID pandemic, where all sorts of priorities have gone in many different directions than rare diseases. As you can imagine, in developing countries, this is even more striking, with the addition of greater discrimination and stigma. So through our membership, it was very, very clear that discrimination and stigma is everywhere, but in some cultural circumstances, it's really very, very strong, in particular towards women, towards mothers. We have heard some terrible stories about exclusion. We have heard men telling us that doctors told them that they should make sure their wives were sterilized, even in the total absence of evidence whether, you know, where the disease is actually coming from. It's just a greater stigma on women, on mothers, on families where one or two or three children are living with a rare disease. And we have heard stories like moms taking their children out only at night to make sure that neighbors would not see them going out or going to the doctors, etc. So yeah. Yes, yeah. Everything can be even worse, yeah, depending on where you are.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's an incredible challenge. Flamini, in doing my research, I noticed on your website, the UN resolution on, and I'm quoting here, the UN resolution on addressing the challenges of persons living with a rare disease and their families. Flamini, what was the impetus behind this resolution? What are you hoping it will achieve? And just curious, are there other international bodies that are making similar commitments?
Absolutely. Thank you very much for the question. So the key goal of the UN resolution was to take this invisible population out from the dark, away from the dark and under the spotlight. Because with visibility, then you can have recognition of the specific needs of what was an invisible population, and you can start working towards equity, towards social justice. The way in which we started was to make sure to become relevant for the United Nations. And this is why the title is not a UN resolution on rare diseases, because that is typically for the work of the WHO, which is because it is very health focused. What we wanted was a holistic resolution on addressing the challenges of both the persons themselves and their families, because it underlines that when someone is living with the rare disease within the family, it impacts everybody and it impacts beyond health concerns. So what we did is that we took a snapshot of a life, going through life with a rare disease and some specific moments when the person needs diagnosed, when there is, you know, the child has to be inscribed in school, and then further on finding a work, et cetera, and we linked all of these key moments of going through life with a rare disease with several sustainable development goals of Agenda 2030. So the impact of the resolution was immediate because it gave immediate visibility, and it also provided an opportunity in countries where patient groups didn't succeed yet to take rare diseases to their national authorities. It provided for an opportunity for them to put rare diseases on the table and open the discussions with their national authorities. And it also strengthened the global rare disease movement, because we were working all together from everywhere in the world towards this specific goal. Now, we do have this holistic UN resolution within which there is very strong language about gender equality, about universal health coverage, about a lot of those challenges. So we can work also with other UN bodies. Like, we have already started working with the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, for instance. We have also worked already with UNESCO in terms of access to education for children living with a rare disease. This is a few examples of other UN bodies beyond the United Nations per se themselves, but we are also going to move to the next phase.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's a great tool, as you said, for those people in their local countries, and it gives them a lot of credibility in terms of trying to achieve their goals, even in their local country or local area. Flaminia, I could talk to you for days. This is so interesting, but we're coming to the end of our discussion today. I'm just curious, Flaminia, what are your hopes for 2023 and beyond? What would a better world look like for people with rare diseases?
Yes, so this is where we are moving to the next phase, exactly. So typically what RDI will be doing for the next couple of years is to work towards a WHO resolution on universal health coverage for rare diseases. It was underlined several times that the top number one priority for our community is access to all what we were saying before. So information, knowledge, expertise, and obviously very much so diagnostics, therapies, treatments, medicines, etc. And health coverage will not be universal unless and until the needs of persons living with a rare disease are not addressed. For the future, what we hope is to reduce the impact of living with a rare disease throughout a lifetime, obviously with improved access to whatever exists that can alleviate and improve quality of life, and also multidimensional, so not only related to health, but related to human rights, inclusion, and full participation in society.
Fantastic, fantastic. It's a noble mission, Flaminia. I'm so glad that you joined us today. I appreciate you sharing your insights and expertise with us, and we'll hope to have you back on the show soon. To our listeners, I want to thank you for joining and listening in today. This is Raising Our Voices for Health Equity. I'm your host, Kim Thibodeau. Please join us next time as we continue the conversation on how to build a more just and equitable healthcare system.